The Pre-Modern Era, The Age and Its Art. Part 3, Post-Impressionism. The formalist, Paul Cézanne, seen in this self-portrait, shared Seurat's concern for structure and technique. Though first exhibiting with the Impressionists, such as with this early work, Cézanne soon looked beyond sunlight and the ever-changing appearance of things, as you can see in this later work. He said in a letter, "It was a necessary step. I wanted to make of Impressionism something as solid and durable as the art of the old masters." He particularly admired the careful organization of the 17th century master Poussin. Like Seurat, Cézanne also reduced nature to a series of simple geometric shapes to give solidity to his subject matter. Instead of using Seurat's dots, however, Cézanne assembled his subjects out of square color planes, carefully laid one next to the other. He wrote, "Let me remind you of what I have been saying. Nature should be reduced to cylinders, spheres, and cones. The whole work should be in perspective. I am trying to show perspective with color alone. Man's view of nature is more in depth than on the surface." Cézanne lived on the verge of a new age, an age when old traditional values were being rapidly rejected. For instance, this traditional still life, seen from a single perspective, had a feeling of permanence. In Cézanne's rapidly changing world, however, these timeless qualities had lost much of their meaning. Instead, Cézanne implied motion and the passage of time by giving each object, the table, the pitcher, the fruit, its own perspective. Follow the edges of the tabletop. The lines are broken. They do not meet on either side of the tablecloth. Each part of the picture is seen from a different point of view. The basket of fruit is seen from eye level. The pot is seen from above. The covered bowl is seen from the side. And the pitcher from the right. This use of different perspectives within the same work helps to translate abstract ideas of motion and the passage of time into concrete visual images. Less than 2 years after Cézanne's death in 1906, Picasso and Braque were to develop cubism, in which the individual object itself is fragmented into a multiplicity of perspectives. In contrast to the formalists, were the expressionists Van Gogh and Gauguin. They sought not the reality of forms and forces, but the inner reality of the self. Both avoided industrialized society in their paintings and in their lives. Van Gogh escaped by committing suicide. And Gauguin escaped to the tropical and exotic world of the South Seas. In a world rapidly becoming over-civilized and over-mechanized, these two artists turned inward to express primitive, childlike emotions. In rejecting the Impressionist's objectivity, Gauguin said, "The Impressionists look for what is near the eye and not at the mysterious centers of thought." Paul Gauguin tried to express the mysterious vital forces that animate the universe, such as the miracle of childbirth, venerated in the Nativity. He first escaped from civilization to the primitive farm regions of Brittany in northern France. But Brittany was still too close to the superficial middle-class civilization which oppressed him. abandoning his family and his bourgeois life completely, Gauguin fled to Tahiti. There, among the innocent natives, he could, as he put it, paint like a child and be in harmony with the mysterious being of the universe. Now he repeats the nativity theme in a Tahitian setting. Like the bright, flat patterns of the native costumes, Gauguin's canvases more and more denied the illusion of deep space and themselves became flat, brilliant statements of color and sensuous line. For his part, Vincent van Gogh said, "Instead of trying to reproduce exactly what I have before my eyes, I use color more arbitrarily so as to express myself more forcibly." Van Gogh distorted and exaggerated his simplified forms. His self-portraits are alive with writhing and twisting lines. So are his emotion-laden landscapes. The canvas is filled with agitated, struggling forms. The colors are intense, brilliant. The sky is dreamlike and explosive. An hysterical and tension-ridden vision. Van Gogh's reality was a foreshadowing of Freud's. He painted suppressed and seething unconscious forces overlaid by a thin veneer of civilization. His prison courtyard symbolizes the oppression of the mind more than of the body. In contrast to the serious visions of the post-impressionists, the fashionable art of the day was restless and self-conscious. Artists pretentiously called it Art Nouveau, or the new art. In fact, it was really not much more than an escape into eye-pleasing decoration. Its lines twist through mass-produced poster designs. Architecture. Advertisements. Park benches, and even street lights. The curvilinear forms of Art Nouveau suggest the last forlorn twisting of an individualism that would find little place in the regimented mass societies of the 20th century. As we have seen, the second half of the 19th century was a tangled web of conflicting views of reality. There was the reality of ugly truths, the reality of light and air, captured in a quick impression, the reality of forms and forces, the reality of the inner self, and the denial of reality in the fanciful decoration of Art Nouveau. Gone was the Renaissance vision of life. Man was no longer the center of things. He no longer controlled his destiny. Gone was the 18th century Enlightenment ideal of the best of all possible worlds and the perfectibility of man. Gone was the early 19th century romantic opportunity to escape into the distant past. By the end of the century, industry, engineering, and technology had changed the life of Western man. Romantic values had been rejected in favor of a material and practical world. Many turn-of-the-century artists rejected this materialistic industrial world, as had Gauguin and Van Gogh. They revolted against science and mechanization. Fin d'un siècle means end of an age. For most men, it had been an age of hope and faith in the miracles of industry. For the sensitive, far-seeing visionary, however, it had become an age of world sickness and anxiety. In 1893, the Norwegian painter Edvard Munch captured the essence of an oppressive environment filled with fear and terror. It had become a threatening and incomprehensible world. By the turn of the century, the artist was striving to express his deep-seated fear of the present and the future. It was too late to turn back from the technology he had worshipped. There was no escape.